Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Fantasy Team Advice Football Podcast.
Good evening and welcome to the Fantasy Team Advice Football Podcast. My name is David Feld. I'll be your host for this evening. And this is episode number 29, we are happy to announce. We are once again joined by Jaime Jackson, a prolific and on-target writer for the FantasyTeamAdvice.com website. So please head on over to the site and check out his articles as well as the many others covering a range of topics from baseball to NASCAR. Yes, that's right. Even car racing is in there. But we're here tonight to talk football. And as usual, the fantasy implications of the many transactions that have taken place over the past couple weeks. And tonight's topics are the situation with the Adrian Peterson negotiating posture and his representation that has taken the objective of leaving the Vikings. We'll also touch briefly on the Ndamukong Suh signing in Miami and what that will mean if you own any running backs in the AFC East, and a quick hit on the Andre Johnson signing in Indy and what it means if you own Dante Moncrief. Good evening, Jaime. Nice to have you back. And let us know, what's the latest with your take on these signings, starting with Ndamukong Suh in Miami? Jaime, are you there? Oh, man. I guess I'll do this myself. Jaime? No, Jaime. Anyway, Ndamukong Suh signing in Miami is a... He is clearly the league's best nose tackle, if not one of the best defensive linemen in all of football. That clearly is opinion. And I think that if you are up against him in any way, shape, or form with any of the jet running backs or even LeSean McCoy in Buffalo and anything the Patriots are going to put out there, whether it's Stevan Ridley, LeGarrette Blount, or Ridley if they re-sign him, or James White, it's going to be a tough go for that situation there. And that whole division, actually, well, maybe not so much the Patriots anymore, but certainly the New York Jets and the Buffalo Bills are just absolutely loaded up against the run. So the topic tonight was, if Jaime were to join us, would be which running backs to avoid, and perhaps the who to take if you just absolutely have to have somebody. I mean, if you're a LeSean McCoy owner, you can't be happy with that situation. Jaime, are you there?
Yes, hello, can you hear me?
Thank you. I thought I was going to have to do another solo show.
No, I was trying to get through all the shows. I'm doing pretty good. It's good to be on again.
Yeah, nice day. I gave you a nice, long, big, fat plug there at the beginning. I was hoping you'd jump right in, beating your chest. Did you hear any of the intro?
No, absolutely. I was on there. I'm not sure why you couldn't hear me.
That was very strange. I don't know. The technical snafus with the thing. You know, we're using cell phones. We're not using a real studio. And, you know, we're using what the website gives us to use. I mean, most of the time it's okay, but sometimes there are these little things that just hold us up momentarily. But it's not that big a deal. In any event, have you been?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
Hello?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
Gone again. Okay. Well, we could talk whatever you want.
Right. Oh, we got onto Ndamukong Suh, right?
Yeah.
I think it's where we were starting off.
Yes. Ndamukong Suh. And I started to make the point that, you know, we're talking about arguably the best lineman, defensive lineman in all of football right now, certainly the best nose tackle. And there are some darn good ones. But I was stretching here to make the point that perhaps it's time to start thinking about avoiding pretty much every running back in the AFC East. And I just wanted to let you go ahead and riff away talk about whatever you want on what you think the implications for the opposing running backs are, and please, you know, talk about like the general strength of those run defenses in general.
Right, exactly. It's a pretty tough division defensively. You know, New York's traditionally been strong, but last year Miami was really, really strong. Aside from the run game, and Dominic Sue is probably the perfect solution to close that up for them. The one thing that I did notice was, I mean, of course, New England lost Vince Wilfork, and the style of offense that Miami runs probably makes Lamar Miller, if he's going to get more carries, the only viable option, really, in the division, like you were saying. It's probably time to stay away from a lot of those guys, just because now that Miami's so strong, we know that New England's going to find a way to plug up the hole, or else they wouldn't have let Vince Wilfork go. New York hired another defensive coach in Todd Bowles, and Rex Ryan is now in Buffalo, and they already had a really strong defense. So I think it's time to watch out when your running back is playing against a team from that division, as well as watch out for how much you're paying for when you in a redraft league when you're taking one of these running backs that has to go up against a Dominican Sue. You know, after Detroit, of course, was number one against the run last year.
That's exactly. So I think that, you know, Buffalo is, you know, Buffalo's going to make the case to be the top defense this year, I would think. I would imagine, you know, the Jets will be up there somewhere too. And, you know, Miami's now with just the ability to stop the run is, last year I was holding with Sean McCoy and Lamar Miller in one league. And, you know, I still have LeSean McCoy, but I was able to trade Lamar Miller because I'm just not a Dolphins guy necessarily. And, you know, I don't know what's going to happen there, but, you know, it looks like they're going to be a good team. In general, I think, you know, they're going to get Brandon Albert back. Marquise Pouncey's probably going to start the season healthy. You know, Lamar Miller finished very strong last year. They looked good. And I thought the Dolphins, you know, at the beginning of the year anyway, were playoff caliber until the injury started piling up on them. But, you know,
I think that the Kenny Stills signing is really good for them too. You know, Wallace is a great receiver, but he's also basically a deep threat. Now, if they want to go deep, they can still do that with Stills, but I think he even runs a better route tree. So that could be interesting also. I think we spoke one time about Jarvis Landry being probably the next man up, but Kenny Stills is, I think, a better option in that offense than Wallace was. Just like I think Macklin is a better fit for a Chip Kelly, Andy Reid, you know, Alex Smith short passing game offense also, you know?
Tend to agree. I think Jordan Cameron, if he can stay out of the concussion protocol, you know, merry-go-round, I think that he is going to – I think he's a great player. He just hasn't had the opportunity to play a full season. He's always banged up. You know, so, I mean,
yeah, he's very good.
He'd be great if he played. I know that sounds ridiculous, but, I mean, he's got the wherewithal and the makings to be, a great player. And I think that, you know, the Dolphins did a great job. I would imagine Brett Grimes will play healthy. The safe, you know, Delmas will get healthy. The secondary probably needs another guy. They draft a guy. You know, maybe they add one more lineman to the team. Maybe if they can get one of the speed receivers to take the Wallace role or the slot role away. I think the Dolphins are set up big. You know, and I think, you know, a lot of the knock on Wallace was from the quarterback spot where Tannehill is, you know, opposed or unable or incapable or just hasn't learned how to get the deep ball going on a consistent basis. And Wallace was complaining, you know, I mean, it's like every time he got past the guy, in his mind, in Wallace's mind, it was supposed to be a touchdown or at least a ball that he could make a play on, at least a long play, if not a touchdown, once he gets by somebody, because he's you know, if he's not the fastest guy in the NFL, he's one of them. And, you know, so I understand the level of frustration, but I don't understand, you know, the constant crying. So Miami moved on from that situation. I think he's going to work out great in Minnesota. And, you know, I think Teddy Bridgewater is a much better deep ball thrower than Tannehill is in general anyway. But I think that's going to work out well for them. But I'm telling you, look out for the Dolphins. That division may be flipped upside down right now. The Jets will be in the middle probably with the Patriots. I can see the Patriots offense being super strong again. But I, as far as balance goes, I see Miami looking stronger every minute here to take a huge step in the right direction.
I actually think I overheard, what was it, in the last decade or so, maybe a little bit longer, the only two teams that have won that division other than the Patriots, one apiece, were the Jets and the Dolphins. So, you know, they want to get back up to there. And they've been, oh, man, I think that the moves that they made last season were interesting. I'm glad that they decided to give Bill Lazor another season. I didn't think he was going to do it all in one season, but I was hoping for it. Being, you know, I was drafting Dolphins looking for that up-tempo offense, you know.
Yeah, no, they're gonna. No, they're gonna. I'm telling you, man. I'd look for that happening. Jarvis Landry's a really good. I didn't realize these LSU receivers are apparently incredibly good. You know, they're, you know, most of them anyway. Seem or the less few seem to be particularly well suited for NFL offenses. You know, maybe not so much Reuben Randall, but I remember when he was being in that draft, Reuben Randall was being talked up as the most pro ready guy by a lot of people. I mean, it wasn't just us. It was, you know, it was a lot of the people in the heavy rotation on whether it's, you know, Yahoo or NFL.com or whether it was Gil Brandt. I mean, there were a lot of guys talking up Reuben Randall as being the most pro-ready guy. And I, you know, and then we saw what Odell Beckham did, you know, last year. And I thought Jarvis Landry had a damn good rookie year, considering he was basically the second or maybe even third option after Charles Clay. Speaking of Charles Clay, what do you think about the Buffalo paying that much money? I mean, they paid him an insane amount of money. Is he that good?
Yeah, I honestly, I love Charles Clay. I think he's a different kind of tight end. You know, he's a great pass catcher. Last year, he improved his.
Were you sad
his,
to see him go
from
the Dolphins, though? I mean, if you're a Dolphins guy, were you sad to see him go for that kind of money? I mean, is that?
Yeah, well, look who they replaced him with in the end. You know, it's almost
exactly.
Like there was an end game. And on top of that, Cameron's a little bit taller, and I think they're going to need their tight end to contest for the ball if they're not going to have an overall main deep threat. And I don't think they will, not because Kenny Stills can't do it, but because you said, Tannehill has a little bit of trouble hitting their man on the deep route. I think Clay is awesome, and I think he's a tackle breaker. And I know that for a while, it feels like Rex Ryan has been looking for that tight end. He did what Dustin Keller was one of them. They drafted Jason Morrow, who wasn't bad at all.
Right.
He's looking for a pass-catching tight end, not necessarily a blocking one, which is in general interesting just because I think that Clay – I was looking it up on Pro Football Focus. I think he graded out they said 11th. In pass blocking amongst tight ends or something. The fact that he improved at all in that department means that he can stay on the field and then he's down, and Rex Ryan gets his man, you know, and I don't know if they'll have enough balls to go to him considering all the receivers they've also, you know, they've got with Sammy Watkins, Robert Woods. I love Robert Woods. And then now picking up Percy Harvin, who you know wants the ball.
Yeah, that's going to be, I tell you, that offensive line's a problem, just like it was with the Jets. That offensive line is still the forgotten thing over there. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do vis-a-vis the draft, but, you know, I would imagine they're probably looking at a quarterback. They're probably looking at, you know, maybe, you know, a little bit more help at defensive end for some depth. And, you know, and maybe at linebacker, but, you know, their offensive line right now is pretty weak. And, you know, I don't, you know, that is usually a harbinger for getting, you know, Matt Castle. I remember watching him getting his bell rung in Kansas City and when the offensive line was injured and sucked. And, you know, I just don't see that. It's especially in that division. I mean, the defenses are monstrous in that division. So it's just like,
well, especially in the end, we also have to.
They may not be very good against the run, but they can rush the passer. So I can see some bad things ahead if they don't fix the line. But, you know, if they address guard and center and tackle, you know, maybe they can figure something out. So.
Well, I think they can I was going to say, I think they can because if they address the position because Rex Ryan has done, you know, with what people think is far less, he did it with Sanchez, you know. And everybody's going to keep pointing to that until he doesn't do it with somebody they think is on level or par with him. And the scary thing about that, in my opinion, is that I don't know if Sanchez was that bad a player. As a butt fumble was real funny, but I don't know if he was
that bad of a player.
He is that bad.
He doesn't see it. He's a good kid who studies hard. But he, when it comes to, you know, he understands it in the film room. It looks like it may work on the practice field. And then when the game starts, he just doesn't see it. And I'm not the only one saying it. You know, guys who play with him say the same exact thing. So,
Well, then anyway, you have to consider Rick. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay. We're moving on to Adrian Peterson. He wants out of Minnesota, and it looks like the Cardinals are the lead favorites. What's your take on what this does for Jerick McKinnon's value, and how does it impact Andre Ellington, provided Arizona lands, what still is, in my opinion anyway, the league's best player?
Well, it's good to hear that McKinnon is back to doing football activities. I think, you know, it was March 20th, I believe, just this past Friday, that they said he was okay to resume all football activities. That's good to hear because I like Jerick McKinnon. I think that he showed some signs that he's a really great back, besides the fact that when he came into camp, Adrian Peterson loved him. He said he was impressed by him and that not a lot of players impressed him. And, you know, he's a smart kid because he was a quarterback in college. And the game that sticks out in my head was when he got a decent shot at the Bills' running defense that we were talking about. The Bills' running defense was just above the middle of the pack. They were pretty darn good, and McKinnon had a 5-yard a carry day, and that happened a lot of the time when he got the ball a lot. So him leaving, I don't think hurts the Vikings as much. I mean, it is going to hurt him. You know, Adrian Peterson is a one-of-a-kind kind of guy, which is why it's going to be a huge impact for the Cardinals as well. But I think that the Vikings are planning to pass a little bit more anyway. They like to have, Asiata on the goal line because he holds on. They feel more comfortable, I think, with him holding on to the ball. And I think McKinnon's going to be the guy that gets 15 to 18 carries a game and gives you a decent fantasy output day with his receiving ability, too. Cause, we know he can do that. He didn't do a lot of it, but we know he can do it. Teams don't like to fumble the ball on third down either, and I think that's another reason Asiata was in there for the passing downs. Now, in Arizona, I think that for Andre Ellington, it says not good things because we know that Adrian Peterson is durable, and that's one of the knocks on Ellington, of course. But I wasn't a huge fan going into the last season. In fact, I wrote it in my preseason article about the Cardinals that Ellington, though he did have some great games, they came at the expense of 24 carries and like 5 or 6 catches, and it was great PPR games. Or he squeezed in the end zone on a couple of downs, and when you looked at his yard per carry at the end of the season, they weren't a whole lot prettier than Trent Richardson. So I wasn't really high on Ellington last year. I knew he was going to do good, but I wasn't willing to pay the price for him. And I think that Arians is going to get what he wants with Peterson if that's where Peterson ends up. You know, he was talking about letting Ellington be the bell cow. Well, if he says that, I don't think he's going to have any problem letting Peterson be the bell cow, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I know who I would prefer. That's for darn sure. I think Andre Ellington's issues last year, particularly the yards per carry and on a secondary note, the injuries. That team, I mean, they used like 5 quarterbacks after all the injuries. And, Jonathan Cooper did not, got highly drafted first-round guard from a couple years ago, turned out to be in Bruce Arians' doghouse almost immediately. And so they were using like a 5th-round or 4th-round pick who actually turned out to be a pretty good player. I just don't remember his name off the top of my head.
Was it talking about Kerwin Williams?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Kerwin Williams?
I think so.
Yeah, I think that's who it is. He was pretty good.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I just added. He's a pretty good player.
Yeah, no, I'm saying it took a while to get him going. And I think that, and especially when you're down to like, Drew Stanton and Logan Thomas, if I'm a defense, especially San Francisco or Seattle, I'm absolutely daring them to pass the football with that guy. And I am loading up on the run like there's no tomorrow. And, sometimes you just have to run it, even though the defense knows it's coming. There's just sometimes you just have to, you absolutely have to do it. And, I think Arizona found themselves in that position more than they would have liked, given the injuries and, whatever else was going on the offense there. I mean, they found some gems otherwise with
the Browns.
Oh, my God. John Brown and one of the other backs.
Jaren Brown.
Was okay. Sorry?
Yeah. John Brown and Jaren Brown, the receivers, did pretty good.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, it looked to me like they were piecing it together, like they patched it together. It wasn't like the defense was playing well, but it wasn't like it was this, like, machine, like he was running in Indianapolis when everybody was healthy, when Andrew Luck and T.Y. Hilton and those guys were all rookies.
Right.
He just didn't have it together. So I think Andre Ellington's issues came from both the, because I think he's a pretty talented guy. And I think that came both from the, you know, from the disappointment from a highly drafted first round guard who was unable to play because of whether it was attitude or being out of shape. Well, being out of shape is attitude, but you know, whether it was those things or whether it was you know, the injuries to the quarterback position, which, I mean, it seemed like at one point everybody on the offense was hurt. So you're just not going to do much with that. But, you know, I don't even think Adrian Peterson can do much with that, to be honest with you. I mean, he'll do better than Ellington did, but that's a harbinger for getting your – if the line is bad, your quarterback and your running backs are in serious risk. So I don't – you know, that's got to get fixed or it's not gonna be much better. But, if they can afford to get Adrian under the cap there and they can – manage that whole situation. I think that's a great landing spot for him. And, you know, it's going to be a team, an organization that totally wants to have him. And, you know, Bruce Arians is a phenomenal coach, and he'll figure it out, and they'll be great. I think that both situations for both running backs, both Adrian Peterson and for Jerick McKinnon, I think the future's bright for both those guys as far as, like, next one or two fantasy seasons goes. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens there. And I don't think Minnesota would probably like to have him back because he's under contract. And but if the guy doesn't want to be there, they get to save $12 million and use it something else, you know. So I could see.
And they're younger now.
I could see Minnesota looking, you know, feeling like they're okay either way here. But, you know, they would most probably prefer to have Adrian back.
No, so I just think that,
that's a take on that.
All right.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say I just don't think that they're in a position to win big like they want to in Adrian Peterson's career. I mean, he is amazing, but he's not gonna go too much further into his 30s than a lot of other backs do. So it just seems like right now is a good time to get younger, get the contract off of the books, and use the money for something else.
I think that's a reasonable take. The last thing we wanted to talk about was Andre Johnson is now a Colt. Excuse me. Andrew Luck is now his quarterback. And where would you take Andre in a redraft? And how much do you think he has left in the tank as a decent to good fantasy asset going forward, you know, for the next couple of whatever, maybe 2-3 years or 1-2 years, whatever. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I love Andre Johnson. We all know he has a great ability. He's getting a little bit older, but in the end, I think he can give you everything that Reggie Wayne does. And I have a hard time believing that he's not going to be a pretty big part of the offense because he didn't want to stick around in Houston to catch 40 balls, right? So when you consider that, I figure he's not going to go to Indy to play second fiddle. He's at least maybe been told, you know, both of you are going to get the targets and whoever's open is going to get the targets. But it's like a situation I think we had talked about with what if Randall Cobb leaves the Packers and I said he has to go to the right team. Well, T.Y. Hilton isn't a big guy. He's not going to go up and fight for the balls. He's not as physical a receiver as Andre Johnson can be. So I think that Johnson's just basically going to be playing that role. And when you consider that, he's bigger and he's probably still a little bit quicker than Reggie Wayne was last season and the season before.
Yeah. At this point in his career, I agree with that assessment as well.
And what was it, a year or two, we had to consider Reggie Wayne and where we were taking him. A lot of people underestimated him. So, you know, think of that as well. Think of the fact that I like Frank Gore being there, and I think that he gives you at least that Amon Bradshaw presence. They're gonna have to worry about him. And they're not going to be able to play, you know, independently the run or the pass. And I think that I have to draft him where Reggie Wayne finished, not last season, but the season before, just because I think he can get that volume. I know that T.Y. Hilton is going to be the big guy, but he's a 4-reception, 120-yard kind of guy. And Johnson, at this point in his career, is an 8-reception, 100-yard kind of guy.
Absolutely. I think that means, you know, I think that Andre, you know, they wouldn't have paid him $7.5 million to not use him. I mean, it's ridiculous. And I think that's both a win-win there. I think that's, you know, Houston acknowledges that, you know, it's time to move on. And, you know, we haven't figured out the quarterback yet specifically. And we can send you to a place where you'll be playing in the dome with a great quarterback. And, you know, and if you, you know, it won't be a huge disappointment if you get a little nicked up like you've been the past couple of years, because they've got a couple of receiving options that they can go to. Yet you still, you understand that you still have the capability to be a top flight performer if you remain healthy. And I think that he's happy about that whole situation. I think everybody's happy about that, actually. It was just time for him to move on. I don't think that it was going to do Houston or him any good to stay there. And clearly, man, what does that do to Dante Moncrief's value, though? I mean, if you're a dynasty player or a keeper player, and you drafted Dante Moncrief, say, in the late first or early second round of your rookie draft, and now Andre Johnson's there probably for at least 2 years, I mean, what does that do to his value, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, because the Colts haven't had a receiver like Andre Johnson, Dante Moncrief in a little while. In fact, I can't think of the last time they had a good receiver like that. I mean, Pierre Garçon was a little bit bigger, but he was he's more of a running back after the catch type of receiver. So I honestly think that this is great for Moncrief, because I love Johnson, but I'm worried about those hamstring issues he's had over both of the last two seasons. And when you think about him missing any time at all, that maybe he was more inclined to sit down because he knows that the team, well, he knows he'll be teaching Moncrief. They're about the same size. He can teach him, this is how hard you need to dig with your size and weight. This is how you have to come in and out of your turns to be quicker and to beat these quicker defensive back type of things. And I don't, he's not the type like, in Dallas when T.O. was there with young Sam Hurd, and they were about the same size, they were hoping for something similar. Sam Hurd wasn't the type of prospect, of course, that Dante Moncrief is, and I don't think that Andre Johnson is the type of player that T.O. was. So in the end, I think this is great. He's a good type of veteran. He's a guy you want in your locker room. They needed a veteran presence after, letting Reggie Wayne go, and this guy's great. He's quiet. You don't hear anything from him until
He is one of the great receivers, we've ever seen. Come on, let's not get around. And that guy is a phenomenal player, and, good guy. And
absolutely.
Just, tremendous work ethic. I happen to think it's a really good signing. I think it hurts Dante Moncrief's value for at least 2 years, and I think that Andre Johnson, again, if, stay away from the hamstring or the health issues or what have you, I think he's going to be a dynamite addition to the Indianapolis Colts offense. And it's just, I think it's gangbusters over there.
Talk about daily league play when they face Indy twice a year.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think he's a I think he's just a professional guy who's going to go out and do his job. He's going to do what he does, and he's going to do it well, because he's such a tremendous player. Wow. Yeah, too bad. I mean, I'm an AFC East guy and an NFC East guy, and I spend most of my time watching them. And if I'm going to watch teams from around the league, I'm usually watching like Denver or Seattle or, whoever looks to be like the darling, whatever the playoff flavor of the month is what I'm watching. And, the past few years, I really haven't been paying that close attention. Plus, Andre's been hurt. But man, I tell you, early in his career, I was paying attention to that guy, and I was dreaming about ever having a player of that caliber I could root for on my team, So I think that the value is there. I think that he's going to be drafted somewhere in that like mid second round to early third round kind of redraft thing. And if he's coming up in a dynasty league,
he's the best quarterback he's ever played with.
I'm a strong team. I take a crack at him at the end of my first round rookie draft as well. I think he's got some decent value left.
How about it's the best quarterback that he's ever played with as well?
And this will be the best guy he ever played with. That is true. Well, the Matt Schaub did have. I mean, clearly, Luck is way better than him. But yeah, that's true. He had a couple of good years with Schaub, and I'm telling you, man, that's going to be a good thing. Anyway, we have we've reached the end, so I'd like to what do you have coming up that you're working on, if anything?
Oh, that was the tricky thing. I started on my postseason, preseason thing, and the free agency thing just threw a lot of that out of whack. So I figured I'd wait a little while, get the draft down, and then get started on that again.
Awesome.
How's your rookie run? You had mentioned something earlier.
It's the most arduous. I don't know why, but it's one of the most arduous things I've worked on in a while. I can't, for whatever reason, I keep moving guys around. I keep changing my mind. I'll get it published in the next couple of days, but I've done a lot of work on it in the past in the past week, but it's been too long coming, and the draft is coming up, and I want to get it out before, you know, at least a couple weeks before the draft. Anyway, head over to FantasyTeamAdvice.com. Please head over to FantasyTeamAdvice.com and take a look at articles from all our writers and focus on football. And tonight's guest was Jaime Jackson, and I'm your host, David Feld. And everybody have a great week, and thank you so much, Jaime.
No, thank you. Good night, Dave.
Good night.